and welcome to Joshua Judges Ruth. Thank you. Thank you. Joshua Judges Ruth is the podcast about the Old Testament books of Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. I'm Ken Lanning. Yes, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. This is episode 5 of Joshua Judges Ruth. Episode 5, Rahab the Harlot and the Two Spies. Today we're looking at Joshua chapter 2. Just a word of warning, though this is a clean podcast and always will be, today I talk about harlotry as it appears in the Bible. So if you're not ready to explain any of that to other listeners who may be around, perhaps you should come back to this episode later. Our story picks up with Joshua and the Israelites camped in Shittim on the east side of the Jordan. Now back in chapter 1, if you'll remember, Joshua told the leaders to get ready because in 3 days they were going to cross the Jordan. So the story we read in Joshua may not be told in exactly chronological order. Here's how we know. In chapter 2, which we're getting ready to look at, Joshua sends a couple of spies over to Jericho, and we know it takes them longer than 3 days to get back. So either the Israelites didn't pack up and cross over in the 3 days because they were waiting on the spies to get back, or Joshua gave the command to get ready after the spies returned, and the writer just chose to tell the story a little out of order, or a third possibility is 3 days means a few days. So there's a number of possibilities that might help explain why the order was given in chapter 1, but then we read of the two spies in chapter 2. At any rate, in verse 1, chapter 2, Joshua sends the spies to Jericho, and before we even get out of verse 1, they wind up at the house of a harlot. Now Shittim is on the east side of the Jordan River Valley, and Jericho is on the west side of the valley. The two locales are about 15 miles from each other. We could call Shittim the Acacias or the Acacia Grove. That's how some translations render it, and that's what the word means. But to stay consistent, I'll continue to call it Shittim. So the spies leave Shittim and actually get inside Jericho and end up at Rahab the harlot's house. Lots more on her later. But for now, let's talk about the spies. The book of Joshua never names the two spies, and they're not named anywhere else in the Bible. We can look to Jewish tradition, however, for their names. Jewish tradition tells us the two spies were none other than Caleb and Phinehas. We have met Caleb before. He was one of the 12 spies sent to Canaan the first time by Moses, and was from the tribe of Judah. He and Joshua were the only spies who came back and recommended they move in and take the land. We have not met Phinehas, however, at least not in this podcast. Phinehas was the grandson of Aaron, the brother of Moses. He was the son of Eleazar, and he was a priest. In the Bible, Phinehas is probably best known for stopping a plague by running a spear through Zimri, an Israelite man who was engaged in fornication with a Midianite woman named Cosby. He ran the spear through both of them together. The plague started because earlier, when Moses was still living, when the Israelites were camped right here at Shittim, they invited the Moabites over and began worshiping Baal, another god popular in the area, which was a violation of the first and second commandments. The Moabites had received some advice from a prophet named Balaam, who told them to entice the men of Israel into sexual immorality and Baal worship. This would make the Israelite god so angry at Israel that he would not protect them. Indeed, in the resulting plague, 24,000 died, according to Numbers 25. Israel stayed mad at Moab for a long, long time about this whole incident. Nevertheless, we don't know for sure it was Phinehas and Caleb who spied on Jericho. We're just going on tradition here. But they get into Jericho, check into an inn, probably, and here's where you might doubt their skills as spies because they promptly get discovered in verse 2. Someone tells the king of Jericho that there are two spies at Rahab's house, so he sends word to her to bring them out because they are spies. Rahab tells the messengers that, yes, some men did come to her house, which wouldn't be unexpected, but they left already. She said if you take out after them, you'll probably catch them. The king's men apparently believe her because they do just that. Meanwhile, Rahab had hidden the spies on the roof underneath some stalks of flax, a plant that's harvested, then dried and bundled up and can be used to make linen. I'm sure one of them was allergic to it and had to try really hard to not sneeze while the king's men were there. Rahab is an interesting figure in the Bible. She's one of the best-known women in the Bible, though she really only appears here in chapter 2 of Joshua, aside from a few mentions elsewhere, which we'll look at. She is called Rahab the harlot, and the word translated harlot means prostitute. Some English translations of the Bible use the word prostitute. There's an argument that can be made that says the word actually denotes an innkeeper, but virtually every translation goes with harlot or prostitute. There are two words commonly used in the Old Testament for prostitute, one denoting just a prostitute. The other describes a temple or cultic prostitute. The word for the more mundane, non-cultic prostitute is used to describe Rahab. That's not to say, however, that she didn't also run an inn. Indeed, she probably did, in addition to whatever other services she offered. That's more than likely why the two spies ended up at her house. The Bible does not even hint that the two spies were there for anything illicit. And you should know by now, the Bible doesn't shy away from hinting at things like that when they happened. So at great risk, she hides the spies, sends the king's men on a wild goose chase, and then goes on to share a profound expression of faith with the spies. She says that everyone in the land is scared to death of the Israelites. Some translations say their hearts are melting with fear because they have heard of the Lord's miracles as the Israelites came out of Egypt. She says they've also heard how the Israelites defeated Sihon and Og in battle. We talked about that in the last episode. She goes on to say that, quote, "The Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath." We don't know if the king of Jericho believed that too, but if he did, he still decided to fight, perhaps believing that his God could still deliver them. We'll never know what would have happened had he met the Israelites at the Jordan and professed faith in the God of Israel like Rahab. Rahab then makes a deal with the spies. She asks them to spare her and her whole family when the Israelites destroy the city. The two spies agree as long as she tells no one about their business in Jericho. They go on to tell her that she must gather all her family into her house and keep them there. They say that if anyone leaves the house, his blood will be on his own head. If her family stays in the house, they will be spared. They tell her to hang a scarlet cord from the window of her house so that the Israelites will know which house is hers. Rahab lets the spies down by a rope through a window of her house. This puts the spies outside the city because her house is actually on the wall. I can only imagine how hip and cool it must have been to have a loft on the wall. I'd love to have been at the meeting when the architect presents his plan for a defensive wall that also provides affordable housing for single female business owners. Rahab tells the spies to hide in the hills for 3 days to allow time for the king's men to give up and return. The spies do just that, and Rahab ties a scarlet cord to her window. The spies hide out for 3 days and then return to Shittim and meet with Joshua. They debrief him and tell him that the Lord has given them the land and how all the inhabitants of the land are melting away from them. Spoiler alert! The Israelites spare Rahab and her family in Joshua chapter 6. We'll talk a little more about her then and a lot more about Jericho, including what the archaeology of the area tells us. So what are we to think of Rahab's harlotry and her big fib to the king's men? Let's look at harlotry first. It's interesting, but if you were to look for a verse in the Bible, and I'm referring to the Hebrew Bible or Christian Old Testament, that said, "Thou shalt not ever go to a harlot," or even, "Thou shalt not ever be a harlot," you wouldn't find one that applies to everyone at all times, at least. That's not to say the Bible condones harlotry. It would be pretty hard to read the Bible and come to the conclusion that harlotry is an acceptable profession, or that going to a harlot is an acceptable pastime. The writer of Proverbs warns against using the services of a harlot more than once. The Lord frequently compares the Israelites to harlots when he condemns their idol worship. In fact, at one point the Lord is so disgusted with the Israelites and their worship of false gods, he tells them that at least harlots get paid for what they do, but they actually pay their lovers to come to them. So I said earlier there was no commandment that forbids harlotry always and forever, but there is a commandment that prescribes cultic or temple prostitution. Deuteronomy 23:17 says, quote, "None of the daughters of Israel shall be a cult prostitute, nor shall any of the sons of Israel be a cult prostitute." The passage goes on to say that it is forbidden to bring the wages of cult prostitution into the temple for an offering. Cultic prostitution was a relatively common practice at this time and in this area of the world. In fact, it's probably what was going on with the Moabites in the incidents with Phinehas I mentioned earlier. Adherents to these religions believe that somehow they were pleasing their god or gods or communicating with them somehow by using cultic prostitution. However, the Lord, who carefully laid out for the Israelites how he was to be worshipped, absolutely forbade the practice for the Israelites. Also, the priest of Israel could not marry a prostitute, but they also could not marry widows. They had to marry virgins. Another commandment says to not make your daughter a harlot. That's found in Leviticus 19:29. We call that sex trafficking, and even today it's considered repulsive. There's one more thing I want to add related to harlotry because it involves a woman named Tamar, whose name will come up again later in this podcast. For reasons I won't get into here, it's a whole podcast in itself. She tricked her father-in-law into procreating with her by pretending to be a harlot. Okay, so I guess I need to explain a little more. Her father was none other than Judah, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, an eponym of the tribe of Judah. Tamar's husband had died, and in this culture at this time, the brother of the dead husband was to have children with the widow, and the offspring would be considered the offspring of the dead brother. Well, Tamar's husband's brother, a man named Onan, refused to impregnate Tamar, so the Lord killed him. Onan had yet a younger brother, and Judah promised Tamar that he would be the one to fulfill his duty to Tamar by having a child with her. But Judah, fearing for his son's life, never sent him to Tamar. So Tamar took matters into her own hands and ended up procreating with Judah by pretending to be a prostitute. There's way more to this story in Genesis 38, but in the interest of time, I'm leaving out some good parts. I bring up that story because, like I say, I want you to understand a little more about who Tamar is when we see her name later, but also to see that back then, like today, there's somewhat of a disconnect the way men view going to a prostitute and how they view being a prostitute. When Judah found out that Tamar was pregnant, he got all indignant and said that she should be burned. When he found out she was pregnant by him, however, he admitted his guilt in not sending his youngest son to her. Tamar ended up giving birth to twins. As they were being born, the nurse tied a scarlet cord to the wrist of the boy, who ended up being born second. There are at least a couple of incidents where women are said to be harlots and the Bible makes no judgment call in the passage, perhaps indicating that being a harlot spoke for itself. One is our story with Rahab. Another is when the two women came to Solomon arguing over a baby they both said was theirs. They were said to be prostitutes. Now, to Rahab's lie, what about that? Doesn't the Bible say, "Thou shalt not bear false witness"? Yes, it does, but without getting into the weeds with that commandment, I always think it's a silly question. The question assumes that remaining honest at all costs is the greater virtue, even if your honesty results in the death of someone else. The friends of Jews in Nazi Germany weren't the first ones who hid Jews and lied to the officials concerning their whereabouts, it would appear. So what happens to Rahab? What's the rest of her story? Actually, the Hebrew and the Christian traditions differ. In the Hebrew tradition, Rahab marries Joshua, and their descendants include the prophetess Huldah and the prophet Jeremiah. There is no mention of this in the Bible. In fact, there is no mention of a family life at all for Joshua. The Midrash says that Rahab was one of the four most beautiful women in the world, along with Sarah, Abigail, and Queen Esther. For Joshua to have married Rahab, or for any of the Israelites to have married her, she must have converted and been accepted by the Israelites. The Israelites were commanded to not intermarry with the peoples of Canaan, not for racial or bloodline reasons, but because the Lord knew that was an avenue by which pagan gods would enter Israel. Christians not only accept Rahab and her conversion, they fully embrace her and give her a place of honor. Rahab is named in the genealogy of Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. She is one of only five women mentioned in Matthew's genealogy of Jesus. The other four are Tamar, who we talked about, Ruth, a Moabite woman, Bathsheba, and Mary, Jesus' mother. According to Matthew, Rahab married a man named Salmon and was the great-great-grandmother of King David. And some Christians believe that this Salmon was one of the two spies. In Hebrews, another New Testament book, Rahab is noted for her great faith. In fact, she's noted for her great faith in Hebrews chapter 11, which many Christians have called the Faith Hall of Fame. Many heroes of the faith are mentioned there, like Abraham, Moses, and Samuel. In the very next New Testament book, the Epistle of James, that is, St. James, Jesus Christ's brother, she is commended for her actions for hiding the spies and sending them off so they wouldn't be captured. This is right after James points to Abraham as a great example of someone living out his faith. But as much faith as Rahab possessed, we see that sometimes it's very hard to live down your past. Alas, both the writers of Hebrews and St. James, after extolling her virtuous faith, refer to her as Rahab the harlot. Next week, we'll see if we can get through chapters 3 and 4. It takes the Israelites two whole chapters to cross the Jordan, but we'll need to spend a little time talking about the Jordan River itself and the always fascinating Ark of the Covenant. Until then, be strong and courageous. Have I not commanded you?